Ready to Be Romanced. I'm Tori.
And I'm Haley.
And today we're discussing
The Viscount Who Loved Me. Okay, that was pretty good. We got it.
I think that was D's. A little insider baseball. I do just line up the tracks afterwards.
It didn't even occur to me because editing is so far outside of my realm of skill that it's just like, what we record is what you get. Enjoy.
Which, like, for the most part, yes, but no, I do just line up the tracks.
Haley,
hi, you're back. I'm so fucking excited to record this because I'm so thrilled to be back in the Bridgerton universe. Holy shit! Yay.
I'm so good. I'm glad. I'm so glad. I feel like I messaged you after the season of The Viscount Who Loved Me came out of season two of Bridgerton and was like, please, just I will talk to you about this because I specifically remember you did this episode alone, like when you talked about it, I was like, call me, please, like I'm so desperate to talk about it. So the fact that we're back here, I'm like truly beyond thrilled.
Yeah, I definitely did talk about it on Ready to Be Petty, which is like it's kind of a little bit outside the wheelhouse of that show, but like it or the scope or whatever, but it's like. It was such a moment when it came out, the Netflix show, that like just everyone was talking about it, whether you read romance or not, which I think is like the like TLDR on the Netflix show, that it's like people enjoyed it even if they weren't romance readers.
For sure. And especially like I think we'll dive deeper into it. But I do find that this book and the TV product are so different that like I very much don't feel like you had to have read the book to like get understand the show or like, you know, enjoy the show, which is nice for the non-readers.
No, I know. But also it's like 200 pages or something like that. You guys, it's so short. Basically, nothing really happens, I feel like, except for their love story. Like, she was nigh on the details of like any other character in this book. So it's like, just read it. It's so short. I think I read it in like fucking 4 hours.
Yeah, it's a quick one. And my personal favorite of the Bridgerton series, and honestly, like one of my top probably 10 favorite books. It's one of those ones that I just reread over and over and over again. I don't think it was last year, but maybe the year before. I was in a bit of a reading slump where from January to April, I didn't read any other book except The Viscount Who Loved Me. I'm not kidding. Like, I would say I probably read it weekly for 4 months.
That's so funny. I definitely go through those too, where it's like all of a sudden I'll just watch only Gilmore Girls for like 6 months or like, yeah, I definitely feel like when I'm reading too many books, I'm like, I just need to read my favorite book again. Like,
yeah.
Something just like comes over you, but that's so funny. Well, I'm glad I pulled some quotes because I think I was like giggling, kicking my feet at this
book.
Yeah,
it's one like, of those ones.
It's so cute. Okay, so let's get into it. This book is written by Julia Quinn and it was published December 5th, 2000. And spoiler warning, we're going to be discussing The Viscount Who Loved Me and season 2 of Bridgerton, which covers the book, but we won't discuss anything that comes after that. So we pick up a year after The Duke and I. This is the other thing I love so much about romance is that like, because of the world building and the cast of characters and stuff like that, like we're really going to spend like 10 years with this family or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So lovely. And even some of the other series that Julia Quinn has written, it's like interconnected with Bridgerton. So even if you're reading those, sometimes you'll get like a little pop-up of a Bridgerton character and you're like, oh, I know you.
It's my favorite thing. Like I really can't stress that enough. And we meet Kate and Edwina Sheffield as they prepare for their first social season, which is really fun. We learn that Kate's mom has passed away when she was 3 and her dad remarried. So she lives with her like half sister Edwina and their mom Mary, or her mom, but you know, they're regarded as a whole family. I also love this too because we really got to look into what it was like kind of living as a single woman, like a single mom in this era, that like, because I feel like it's everything is so wrapped around usually the man of the house or like the heir or whatever, like Anthony. Antony or Anthony?
I believe it's Anthony, which is hard. It's hard to grasp because when you're reading it, it's like, it's Anthony. And then the show is like, Anthony. And you're like, who's that?
Yeah, I know. I just like, I do it so interchangeably in my head. But yeah, it's kind of, they have like a little bit of a sad backstory because their father passed away. But they really show up for each other. We learn like that they are from the countryside and like on the poorer side. So they have to be really strategic about Edwina and Kate both entering the marriage market. So Kate is a little bit older than women usually debut, and they've been just like practicing and saving up all their money for this moment. Edwina gets named the first diamond of the water, which like this is I think one of my favorite parts of the book, is because it's like Kate is the protagonist, but it's like she feels unworthy, and like she really compares herself to Edwina, who like everyone like fucking drops dead every time they like look at her and stuff like that. And it's like, no, like you are like super smart, beautiful, like funny, quick-witted. Like you also are a first diamond in some people's eyes.
But the ton is so shallow, and Edwina is just so gorgeous that everyone's like, ooh, Edwina. And they don't even care that Edwina is also so lovely to be around. Like, she has a great personality. She's also super smart. She's so curious and interested in like reading, and she's like really funny too and like sly, where I feel like Kate is pretty forward about being like, I am smart and witty, where Edwina is like
No, that's so true. And it's so funny because I feel like most characters that are so beautiful are like, okay, well, they're also really shallow. But she's like, I really want a scholar. And like, I'm really bookish, she says. It's like,
I love her.
I love her so much. And it's so funny because like, Anthony isn't really like that. Like, so it's like, it's just, again, it's showing that they aren't a good match, basically.
Also like a huge age difference. And I know it's like not that big of a deal in this era, but Edwina is 17 and Anthony is 29. And he even talks about how, like, you know, he's had a hard time with some of the women in the town in the past because, you know, they're all pretty shallow and he's more than that, blah, blah, blah. He wants a smart wife, so he has smart children. But yeah, he like doesn't have the patience for many of the women around. And so he appreciates that Edwina isn't a dum-dum, but he also just like feels nothing for her, and he's like, this is a great idea.
Yeah, because his dad passed away, and that made such an impact on him as a kid that he doesn't believe that he's gonna live past the age of 38, which is when Edmund passed away. And so he basically swears to himself that he isn't going to marry for love. He's just gonna marry to continue the Bridgerton name. And he's looking for like a woman of good stock, he like basically says, and someone that he can like respect and be friends with, which technically is Edwina.
Like, I know, right?
Like, so I'm like, your plan, yeah, it's like your plan like did work technically, but obviously Kate threw a wrench in that. And we see that like Kate knows about Anthony before she even meets him. I think that's the other thing that I kind of do feel bad with Anthony about, is like, I do feel for the guys like the Duke and the Viscount and the Prince and stuff like that, that like, because women are so after title, not in a bad way, it's like the only way for them to advance in society at this point, but it's like they're so after the title and stuff like that, that it's like, I kind of feel like sometimes you would feel like, do they actually like me, or is it just my money and my status?
For sure. And like, you know, the Sheffields kind of like do want Edwina to make like a good,
yeah, technically they're not
super well financially. But, you know, they are very much like, Edwina, like, whoever you fall in love with, like, that is fine with us. But, like, if he's rich, like, that would be great, girly girl.
Because that would, like, save us from a lot of stuff. It also just sucks that the women, it's like, they live in a different town, but they have to, like, come here, or a different area, I guess, of London. And then they have to come here, and basically the woman is expected to, like, uproot her life move into the Bridgerton house. Like,
yeah, that seems like a lot.
Yeah, so they're reading Lady Whistledown, Kate and Mary and Edwina. So they know about Anthony Bridgerton because Lady Whistledown writes about his rakish ways a lot. And she, like, really goes in on him, like, okay, rakes can be reformed. Reformed rakes make great husbands, but, like, he is irredeemable. That's, like, so fucking rough. Sometimes I'm like, sometimes Lady Whistledown is just, like, chit-chattery gossip, like, fun, fun, fun. And then sometimes I'm like, oh, that's a brutal account.
Yeah, like, that's a judgmental, like, biatch. And, like, oof. Like, oh, tough. But tough, tough, tough. And at this point in the book series, we don't know who Lady Whistledown is, which is fun. Oh, gosh, that is tough. And, you know, based on this and, like, other Whistledown pieces, Kate is very much like, Edwina, stay away from Anthony Bridgerton. Like, that guy is bad news. You want a love match, he will not be it.
Totally. Why do you think Edwina cares so much about Kate's opinion instead of Mary's opinion?
That's a good question. I think maybe just, gosh, that is a good question. Because she's so, like, open with her opinion and that she's so, like, steadfast in what she believes. And, like, Edwina's probably never seen Kate be wrong. So it's like, okay, well, right, then Kate's opinion is right. And I have to kind of go with that.
I get
and like
that.
And also people, like, everyone's I think that Edwina is also, like, really observant, and she probably sees that all of the suitors treat her in one way and treat Kate in a different way. So, like, Kate's almost getting, like, the real perspective of who these guys are.
That's true. Because, yeah, it's like the guys that only treat women with respect if they think they're hot.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, I think the thing that I'm still a little bit confused about this premise is because it's like, if they want her to have a love match, wouldn't they just really be basing it off of Edwina's decision and, like, feelings?
Tori. You're asking a lot from this book.
Yeah, I know, I know. From a, like, 200-page book. I know, I know, I know. So Anthony at the same time is realizing he needs to settle down and start a family. And again, he's, like, really resolved that he is gonna die before he can, like, even fully raise his children. But he's like, which is, like, actually so dark-sided. I don't know why I'm laughing. But he's like, no, this is time. And, like, even Benedict and Colin, when he tells them, he's like, they're like, okay, Betty, like, let's sure, see this, let's see this happen. But he's like, hey, I have to have the best woman. So, like, who's the season's incomparable? And they're like, Edwina. So he's like, okay, I'll marry her. So at the ball the next day, Edwina and Anthony dance. No sparks or anything. Like, it's just so, it's like a business proposal almost. Mm-hmm. Like, the way that they're talking to each other. And Kate's nervous because, again, she's heard about the way that he acts with women and doesn't want Edwina to fall in love with him. And Edwina wants to introduce Anthony to Kate because her opinion matters so much, so they dance for the first time. She's like, there's absolutely no way that a man like you is gonna marry my sister. And he just, like, sees it as a challenge, and he's like, I never back down from a challenge, so, like, fucking game on.
And, like, the best part is the lead up to this particular scene, because I just find this whole scene genuinely funny, because Mary, their mother, introduces her Kate to Colin, who she met earlier in the evening with, like, Colin and Anthony's mother. And Colin right away, like, sees Kate for who she is and, like, appreciates that about her. And, you know, she calls him a rake to his face, and he's so shocked, and he thinks it's hilarious. And then at some point he, like, tells Anthony, like, you have to meet, like, Edwina's sister. Like, she's a spinster, she'll fall at your feet, blah, 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 blah. And she meets him, and Anthony's like, oh, you're as lovely as your sister. And Kate's like, babe, like, I know you're lying to my face.
I know. Yeah, a spinster at 22 that just could not handle speaking to a man like Anthony Bridgerton. I fucking cannot get over this.
I know, it kills me.
Also, I feel like they depict Colin in the show as such a, like, dummy. I guess just, like, dumb in the way that, like, he cannot see.
They make him really young and naive in the show.
Yes, it's like he's dumb to the ways that Penelope likes him. He almost got duped by Miss Thompson. And he almost got duped by the necklace thing. So it's like, yeah. He kind of
like, babe.
He's kind of depicted as a dummy. But it's so funny because in the books, he is like the catalyst for both couples to like get back together after they have their like third act breakup. And I am dead. He's like, he's the wise one that sees it all before the main couple. It's so fucking funny.
And I love that, like, they always make a point of saying, well, Colin's been out of the country for 6 months. How did he even know this? It's just because he's, like, such, like, a little charmer that he gets, like, all the hot goss. Like, he is basically the male Lady Whistledown. He's Lord
Which is perfect. Perfect for Penelope. Perfect for Penelope. Yeah, and it's so funny because Kate is Antony with Daphne last season. Like, she's that to Edwina. So it's just so funny how similar they are, but they just, like, cannot see it for a second.
Like, neither of them can see the forest through the trees here because they're just so hell-bent on being like, I hate you. And, like, neither of them can be like, you know what? This is a good time hanging out with each other.
No, I know. And it's, like, we're sparring. We're, like, competitive. We, like, care about our families so much. I'm like, you guys are the same fucking person. Like, just get married already.
Do it right off the hop.
So the day after the ball, Antony visits the Sheffield house in hopes of seeing Edwina. But she's out with Nigel Burbrook, which, again, is so funny.
What a throwback.
Like, I love when we know all of the little side characters. And so Mary, like, returns to the house and she's like, well, why don't you all go on a walk? All meaning Antony, Kate, and her dog, Newton. And also, Newton for a corgi runs a lot. I don't know. I feel like corgis are kind of like... Dun, dun, dun,
like. I love corgis. They're like my favorite dog ever. For years and years, I've had the dream of like meeting a corgi. And a couple of weeks ago, I finally got to meet a corgi in real life. And I got to pet him. And his name was Winston. He was so cute.
That's cute. Newton and Winston are very corgi names.
Yeah, and they were like, Mary was fighting in the hallway with the dog a little bit, and Antony's like, oh, must be a Rottweiler, and then, like, the little corgi catches out, and he's like, what the hell is this?
It's so funny. And so they go for a walk in Hyde Park, and Newton, like, pulls away from Kate, and so both of them are chasing the dog through the park, which... Again, as, like, upper class people, they're, like, not supposed to be, I think, like, running and stuff like that. And it's such a cute scene in my head.
I know. I love it. And, like, and this is when Antony's like, do I find Kate hot?
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I can't. No, I find Kate hot.
Yeah, because he isn't this when he's, like, looking at her, like, hat or whatever, and she's, like, or, like, bonnet, and he's, like, because they have to wear bonnets when they're, like, outside or whatever, and he's, like, that's, like, such a ridiculous hat. I wish she would take it off because she's actually really hot. If she just got rid of the hat.
That's a different bonnet later on. This bonnet is just, I know, there's just a lot of bonnets here. There's a lot of bonnet scenes, and this one he just, like, helps loosen a little bit so she can get more.
Oh yeah, face. He like touches
like, yeah, like, oh no, I'm desiring her but I hate her so much.
Yeah, you're right, she wants to sun her face, so, and she's like trying to maneuver the bonnet so she can get more sun on her face, and he like helps her. Like, the thing that makes this book so much better, like, I actually really suggest reading it post watching season 2, because then you can just picture Jonathan Bailey and Ashley Simone, and it just makes it so much fucking better.
I know, it's lovely. It's so, I love their chemistry together, but we'll get there in the show. But
yeah, we'll get there.
And then the dog finds Edwina and knocks her into the Serpentine, which is like a big pond, I think. And then Antony goes in to get her and yells at Nigel Burbrook. One of my favorite lines is, I think it comes a little bit later, or no, maybe Antony says it, where he's like, Nigel Burbrook has as much wit as he does hair. And Kate's like, yeah, but he's balding. And Antony's like,
yeah. Totally. And they're just like so angry and like frustrated with each other and bothered by each other's presence. There's a point where he's like yelling, like, I'm going to kill you, but like in like a fun way.
In a totally fun way.
To Kate, and it's like, this is the way that he would speak to his like family, I feel like, which makes them again a good match, that it's like they would just fit in so well, and we see that later on, but it's like she just belongs with the Bridgerton family because they're less formal and stuff like that. Like, he would never say this to another like lady,
and it's like even a surprise he says it in front of Edwina, and Edwina's like, Kate, why are you being mean to Antony? And she's like, take my side, Antony's being mean to me.
It's so funny. So later on, it's like a few days later, Edwina gets sick because she fell in the Serpentine, which is like, this girl has such a rough go of it. And like the night before, Kate and Mary go to the Bridgerton house to watch a musicale. Antony has a wet dream about Kate. I don't know what other way to put it.
I was going to say like a sexy dream, but you took it there. Actually, he like makes it known that it wasn't a wet dream,
which actually made me want to kill myself. But yeah, he basically has a sexual dream and he's like, what the fuck just happened? He's like, I'm so disturbed by this that I'm going to hook up with the opera singer just to like distract myself and like disassociate from my true feelings. And I was like, that is so, that is so relatable.
I mean, I've never been there personally.
Yeah.
But I was also been through injuries, so like, whom's to mind to judge, you know?
As at the musicale, Kate watches Antony flirt with Maria, the opera singer, and she's jealous. Do you think
she's so jealous? Like, she cannot stop staring. And then Mary's like, girl,
stop staring.
You have to stop. Like, you're being a creepy creeperson. Like, I love all three of the Sheffields. Like, I think Mary, Kate, and Edwina are all so funny and smart and lovely. And I just really adore their family dynamics. I think it, like, every scene where it's the three of them, I'm just like, what a nice time.
I know. I really hope. I don't think that Edwina and Mary are in season three, are they?
I don't believe so, no.
Yeah, sad for us. But yeah, I completely agree. Like, it's fun. It's so funny when she's like, stop staring. Like, I would be the same. And it's crazy how he's acting with Maria, because basically what we've watched or read at this point is like, you cannot even address women of a certain class by their fucking first name, and he is touching Maria's hair and kissing her neck
in public, in front of his mom.
And
yeah, no wonder his mom's like giving him a dirty look the entire time.
It's insane. It's so insane. But I do like how they adapted. I kind of wish we saw this scene in the show, not to get too much into the show, but like, I think this would be a really fun show or scene in the show, but like, we got the Sienna storyline in season one, which is like kind of like the precursor to what this was. Okay, so Kate like has some rude interactions with people from the Ton, and so she wants to leave. She runs and ducks into a study, which turns out to be Antony's, and she's just like taking a deep breath. The door opens and in walks Antony and Maria. So she like dives underneath his desk to hide, which like, it's always, you just watch this happen and you're like, this is always the bad mistake. Like, this happens all the time and it's always the wrong choice.
Yeah, I know. It's like, but what would she have done? What else would you, I remember reading for the first time being like, oh no. Like, oh, I was so surprised. It's like, ah.
I was like, is she going to get found out, or is she just going to have to like basically witness them having sex? I was like, I'm so scared for her.
I know, right?
But this is like, this is so fucking cute, because he actually smells her like Lily soap or whatever. And he's like, oh my God, I really can't get rid of this bitch. Like I'm trying to distract myself and I can literally smell her. And then he like looks down and sees Kate and is like, okay, Maria, you gotta go. And then he's like, what the fuck are you doing here? Like, why are you hiding in my study? And they have a really big argument and he kisses her. Fucking wild. Wild times. No, I was like so shook to my core about this because again, it's like you're not supposed to do this. And like he was so mad at Daphne and stuff for doing this. So I'm like, you're ruining it for Kate if you're not gonna marry her.
Well, and it like and that comes up in this scene where she's, you know, they kiss or whatever, and then she like I think she comes to her senses and was like, oh my God, like I can't do this. And you know, she's like, well, I literally just heard you say you're not planning on marrying for love. You're planning on like keeping on like affairs while you're married and like, and you want to do that with my sister? Like, absolutely not. Like, would you let that happen to your sister? Like, if Edwina was your sister, would you let her marry a man like you? And he was like, well, that's besides the point. And he's like, I think I have my answer, Lord Bridgerton.
He's so dumb.
Like, he's so dumb. He like cannot. He's like standing in his own way, and I get it because he's like has this deep seated fear that he cannot talk about with anyone else. But he just like he's so dumb. Like, grow up, Anthony.
He's so dumb, and he's actually really awful here. I think this is like the only time in the book where he's like, this is actually like truly awful. Why does she need a key to get out of the study? He locked it from because the inside.
He locked it to like just. I think he locked it. Like when Maria was in there, and then he like opened it again, like locked it again so he could yell at her.
Yeah,
he was just like, he was mean and he knew he was being mean, but he just like couldn't help himself.
He was like so mean. He immediately regrets it. I actually love this bit because I feel like we don't get this in romance novels, because he's like being mean to her and then like his dialogue in his head is like, fuck, like, why am I saying these words? Like, what am I doing here? Like, I know I'm being such a jerk. She wants to leave, so he throws a key, like, the keys at, like, purposely at her feet because she tries, I would actually fucking kill myself. She, like, tries to catch it. She obviously doesn't. So it makes this big, ridiculous clap with her hands.
Oh, so
and then he knows she's going to have to bend down on her knees and get the keys. And he's like, he immediately is like, I wanted to like run to her feet, pick up the keys and like give them to her.
Oh,
but he can't. He can't. So they just leave like that.
And then he has the audacity to send Edwina a big bouquet of flowers that said like, your shining presence was missed last night. It was so boring. And like Kate's like, this isn't for Edwina. This is a snide remark at me, and go F yourself. Like, how rude.
The Sheffield's heading to the Bridgerton's country home, Aubrey Hall, because Violet is hosting a party. And this is, again, one of my favorite scenes.
What we would not give to go to a country party in an estate.
It was so much fun. All like the, I love Pall Mall. I love playing like lawn games. I guess
I love like Pall Mall. Walks through gardens.
Gorgeous gardens.
Nice lakes.
Yeah. And it's stunning. Like, again, oh my God, like the drone footage of this fucking estate in season two. Like, I was gagged. Like, it's so unfair. It's so fucking unfair that I'm not living there.
I know. Or like at least know somebody to live there.
Exactly.
So I can get invited to like just a nice party. And like a house where you're inviting so many people and you have like rooms for every single one of them plus more. Cause like Mary has her own room and then Edwina and Kate have a room. So it's like two rooms for one single family. Like, crazy. I just want to be there.
And enough staff to like wait on them.
What a life.
What a fucking life. Kate like gets out of the carriage at the front of Aubrey Hall and is like, oh my God, like, I love it here. I love the countryside. I love this estate. I love being outdoors and stuff like that. And when she's greeting Violet, Violet's like, oh, that's so funny because that's, you're really like my son, Anthony, because he loves it here. He mostly grew up here and he actually prefers living here versus London. But he's in London because of like the heir to the Bridgerton wealth or whatever. He like needs to manage stuff. And she's like, I'm like Anthony, like no fucking, no fucking way.
Yeah, she's like, like no offense, Madame Bridgerton, but your son Anthony is a real fuck.
Yeah. But she immediately goes to the gardens for some fresh air, and Anthony immediately finds her because he's like watching her from a window, like arrive.
Yeah, well, because like, yeah, he like sees her come in, and then he again is like, oh no, I find her so hot.
Yeah.
And then he goes to talk to his mom like as soon as the Sheffields go to their rooms, and she's like, ooh, babe, why don't you go like take a little walk, maybe through the flower garden, perhaps? Where he stumbles upon Kate, and then he apologizes to her, which is like nice. And he's again trying to be a dick by being like, for the kiss? You want me to apologize for the kiss? I just meant like the way I treated you. But then he wants to mack her again. He's like, should I mack her in the garden?
I know. He's so ridiculous. So he's like, yeah, he apologizes and she's like, oh yeah, you mean apology, like you're apologizing for the kiss. And he's like, oh no, I wasn't even thinking that. I was thinking about the other stuff because he's I'm not sorry for that.
Yeah, like I love that. I wanted I would like to do it again, I think, right now.
He's just like, yeah, for sure. That's exactly what I meant. Thanks. But he's like still thinking about kissing her. I'm like, fucking keep it in your pants, Anthony.
And like, of course, this is the moment when Colin's like, hey guys. And like,
but Colin's like, I see you. Like, I've got y'all figured out. But he's like, hey, we're gonna play Pall Mall. Is it Pall Mall or Pall Mall? I'm gonna have to edit out my wheezing. So I read it as Pall Mall.
I do too.
And then when I was watching the show, I finished it yesterday, and Daphne's like Pall Mall.
I think it's just their accent. Like for us, it's Pall Mall. I think in French, because it's like Pai Mai or whatever.
Oh, so. Yeah. They like explained that in the book. I was like, too much info. It's croquet. Like,
don't care. Like, what is this? A Sarah J. Maas book with all that information? Yo, no, I read a book. My best friend, like, always keeps, like, chapstick on her because she always gets dry lips. I was like, I don't care. I don't care about this woman.
I don't care. I want to be so clear about that. There are so many details about in books that I'm like, I don't give a fuck. I don't give a flying fuck about this.
And then like later in the same book, like we are getting to the crux of like the climax here. And then the dumb bee was like, my cousin is 5 years old because my aunt had like fertility issues and like she didn't have a baby until she was 40. I was like, I don't care
about,
like,
the aunt.
I'm sorry for your struggles. Yeah. I do not care about this woman I met 1 second ago.
No, 100%.
In like on page 275 out of 300. Thank you.
Totally. Because it's like with Nigel Birdbrook, like that's fun that we get like scenes with him, but we don't get his full backstory of it. Like,
no.
Nigel's
story is going to come to like a cute, not a cute, but like a cute little head later on in the series where it'll feel very well-rounded and you're like, oh okay, but it adds the world building and not just like unnecessary details.
Yeah, absolutely, totally, could not agree more. So the game is Anthony, Kate, Colin, Edwina, Daphne, and Simon, and they do this entire bit. Like, this is fun, even though it's so like fun. It's like a quarter of the book.
And like honestly, when I reread this, you kind of I kind of just go like,
how many?
And I like sports. Like I like sports, but
I'm just thinking about all the times I read books and do that. Like in Twilight, when they talk about like the like Carlyle's backstory and stuff like that, I'm just like.
I mean, maybe the tiniest bit of a spoiler for Romancing Mr. Bridgerton. So, like, take a pause for a second if you don't. Colin, like, writes travel journals. And, yeah, like, we yeah, get yeah. the writing in that. And I skip it every
no.
time.
No, I'm like, not I'm not, that.
I'm happy for you. Yeah. On my reads, not going in here.
No, totally. 100%.
Or like songs in books I don't read.
No, even and the like, riddle in fucking A Court of Roses and Thorns and Roses. The first time I skipped reading it.
A lot of times, if the text is italicized, that means it's just a suggestion for me to read it.
100%.
Which means like half of Feyre's and Ryson's like conversations, because they're like in their head through the bond. Like I accidentally skip it because I'm like, no, I don't care. And I'm like, no, actually, I actually have to read this.
Fuck, that's so fucking funny. Yeah, no, I get that. Because if it's a song or a riddle, there's this book I just read. It was called One Dark Window. And there's all of these, I think it's like spells or like they're trying to figure out this magic or something like that. And there's so many poems. And every single time I just had to flip through, like I just could not be bothered.
Even like the chapter caps of like the Lady Whistledowns on that, like on any reread, I'm not reading those. Like again, italicized means it's a suggestion for me.
No. And like, to be honest, I kind of just... I think I read most of them, but like I also kind of just like it was a deep skim, like wasn't reading to understand. So yeah, they do this huge funny bit because the Bridgertons are like so fun and so cute, and they're so competitive about this game, about how Antony always picks the black mallet, which he has named the Mallet of Death, and like no one wants the pink one because that's like girly or whatever. So they're like divvying out the
pink one. Yeah. Actually, I'd probably pick the purple depending on the shade.
I would pick the pink like 100%. So I was just like LOLing, and like Colin like leaves the purple one purposely in the like shed or whatever. He's so funny. And so they all have to pick, and like they pick blue and green and yellow, and then the last one is pink. And so Antony has to take the pink one. Kate picks the black one. And it's like, yeah, because they're soulmates.
Yeah, of course.
And basically they just have this big joke about like, if you can hit the ball into the lake, it's like, I don't know, you're like the winner because it's funny, I guess. I don't know.
Because they're so competitive. Like they're more, the point of this game is not to win. It's to make everyone else lose.
Mm-hmm. Don't you love that? Like, I love this. I don't know if it's because it reminds me of my childhood or something like that, but it's like going out to like a lake or something and playing like a dumb lawn game. And it's like the simplest game, but you just like, you make it so crazy. Like, it's so mm-hmm. fun.
We're big bocce ball fans in this household. And we have actually like a really good yard for bocce ball because like we have a long side yard. So we play a lot of bocce ball, or like sometimes I'll take the dartboard out and play that, or like fun. love cornhole.
We're a big like ladder ball family.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, this is just good times. And Kate and Antony like get into it. She has the opportunity to hit his ball into the lake. So she wins. Everyone's so stoked for her. He's like seething.
So angry.
He's so mad. And then Kate and Antony are like, okay, we'll like go retrieve the ball from the lake. And so he has to get into the lake or like the pond or whatever to get the ball. Or he has to like wade in to like his calves or whatever. And they're just like bantering the whole time about how annoyed they are with each other, basically.
And then we like finally get our like first little tender moment between them. I also want to mention that you've made note of the line where Antony said he was suddenly gripped by the most insane desire to see her toes.
It's so funny. Not that I think he has like a foot fetish or anything, but it's like
he has a cakey fetish. Like he's just so obsessed with her.
He's so obsessed with her, but it's like, you kind of forget, because again, we're just not used to it, how buttoned up these people are. Like, she's wearing a fucking bonnet. She's wearing like
a full like length gown. Like, no ankles to be seen here today.
No ankles. She's wearing a long sleeve dress with gloves, so there is a sliver of her wrist showing. Because when they walk back to Aubrey Hall, they like stop under a tree I like this moment. They're like leaning up against the tree and he kisses the inside of her wrist. But it's like, that's the only part of her body really that that's he can showing. See.
Because he's so desperate. Like, he's so like, it's flipped in his brain now where he wants her approval. Like, and he thinks he wants her approval for Edwina, but he just like wants her approval. And he's like, we're friends, right? Like, you don't hate me anymore, right? And she's like, I mean, I guess. He's like, great. I'm going to, like, he's like, should I mac you? And he's like, no, I can't do that. And then, like, puts a searing kiss on her wrist and, like, walks away. And she's like, I think the line is, like, she knows in that moment her life has changed forever, but she just can't figure out why. And it's like, oh, I love it so much. There's so many lines in this book where I'm like, oh.
I know, like, I'm like sick to my stomach. Like,
I know, I love it. I love it so much.
It's so also, it's just like so funny because his language, like the words he's speaking is like, I'm continuing to pursue your sister. I want to propose to her. We're going to get married and stuff like that. But all of his behavior is like,
the yeah, he's like, opposite. I want you, Kate.
It's so funny. So that night, both Kate nor Antony can sleep. Antony is because he's thinking about Kate because he's fucking obsessed with her. And Kate is scared of the thunderstorm. So Kate goes to the library to like calm her mind and Antony finds her. And she is like unwell and she's freaking out. At this point, we don't know really like why, but she like hates storms. And it's really sad. This is like really sad because she's like hiding again, and he's like, oh, Kate, and he's just basically saying like it broke his heart to see her. Also him saying her first name is like, because like they don't
do that.
Yeah but he like calms her down. He says, so she's like closing her eyes, she like cannot even open her eyes, and he says if you just look at me you will know that you are safe. And then they finally kind of talk about the loss of their parents. So that's where we find out that Kate's scared of storms because, well, at this point she kind of thinks like, well, my dad, I've always been scared of storms. My dad used to read to me and then he passed away and no one's there to comfort me. So like, I'm scared of them. But we learn later in the book that it's for more like sad reasons. And then he talks about the loss of Edmund and how great of a man he was. And they decide to come to a truce and be friends. He goes, Antony, you should call me Antony. I believe I've already called you Kate. It's very cute.
It's so cute. Oh my God. And this is like the scene where it's just like so tender and lovely. Mm-hmm. And you're like, he's a good guy. And then the next day, like neither of them have slept well.
Yeah.
You know, he wakes up and he looks out the window and of course he sees Kate walking by because like he was like I knew I'd see her walking by. So he runs down to the garden and she's like tired and he's like, you doing okay? And I think this is a cool scene because we keep switching like perspectives. Mm-hmm. I feel like Julia Quinn does a really good job at switching perspectives.
She does.
Mid-chapter. And then yeah. You don't have to like wait until the next chapter to get the other character's perspective. I just like she flows it really well. And then she's trying to get out that she like no longer opposes Antony's suit of Edwina because of course, like he's so tender and kind, but we see finally that she admits she's like, but I want him for myself.
I know, she says, because deep in her heart she wanted him for herself. So she finally admits that she likes him, just so nice because he knows at least like he like is I guess lusting after her. But it's very very cute, and she's like mortified because it just weighs so much on her. The family duty of like, we saved mm-hmm. money, we prepped for this, we came down here, it's a really big deal. I like, yeah, like know that it's very important to secure this money. She's just deeply conflicted, but this is the scene. Like, this is
the scene
of the book, or maybe even the series, I don't know. She gets stung on her collarbone by a bee because the bee is like floating around her and Antony is like, don't fucking move. And she's like, oh my God, what? Like, is there a bear or something? Like, and he's like, there's a bee near your hair. And she's like, oh, that's fine. And like waves it away and stuff like that. He's like, no, you could die from this bee, which is like technically true. Edmund passed away, we know, from a bee. Like lots of people are allergic to bees, which I guess they didn't really have like the words for like allergies at this point. But yeah, she gets stung basically. And he's like, oh my fucking God, the person I love is going to like die in my presence. And so he's like, I have to, he's freaking out. And she's like, oh my God, no, it's like totally okay. He's like, I have to expel the venom. So he takes his handkerchief and he like tries to do it with his hands, but it's still red and swollen and stuff like that. He's like, I have to suck the
venom. I have to suck your tip. I have to. Like,
I have to suck the venom.
For your own safety, I have to suck your tip.
I'm like, in the moment, he thinks it's so logical. I'm like, so like, yeah, of course. Like, it's like, my duty.
Yeah, he's just so overtaken with like this fear that she's going to die because she got stung by a bee. Mm-hmm. And she's so confused because she didn't really hear how Antony's father had died until like this moment where she was he was stung by a bee. And she's like, ooh, okay, cool.
Yeah, she's cool. Like, oh, that's fine. Yeah, it's so fucking crazy. And of course at this moment Violet, Mary, and Mrs. Featherington catch them unchaperoned in a very compromising position because it looks like they're hooking up. And they're like, no, look, like, bee sting? Lady Featherington is just like, no, I'm telling everyone about this. You have to get married.
You were sucking her bubbies, which is, like, truly what they were calling it.
Literally, she says, he had his mouth on your bubbies, and we all saw it. There's such a fucking...
Oh, my God, my collarbone.
No, yeah, they're, like, pointing to, like, basically her shoulder. And then it's so fucking funny when Antony says, he's like, will someone shut her up? And then Mrs. Featherington goes, well, I never. And then Antony goes, no, you always.
Like, this book is genuinely funny.
I was LOLing. Like, I don't think I laughed in The Duke and I, but I was like,
no, The Duke and I
am laughing.
In my opinion. But this one is like, after reading The Duke and I took such a pause before picking up this one. And it was like, I was so shocked when I read this one because I loved it so much. So Tori, I need to know, like, after you read this scene for the first time, like, where were you at? Because in the show, it's done like very differently. Like, mm-hmm. It's like, it feels like it has emotional importance, but it's like in this book, it is the storyline driver.
No, it is. It is. Okay. So I was mad basically. Because it's like, and I'll talk about this, but I feel like more in Gripes and Grumbles, but it's like, it's the same catalyst with,
sure,
yeah, with Daphne and Simon, where they are in a compromising position and people find them. And because they have to save her virtue, they get married. So like, I was kind of annoyed, but like, A, who thinks of this? Like, who the fuck, like, who thinks of... like a bee sting driving so much of this plot. Like, it's so funny. It also shows a lot about Antony's character, I think, and Kate's character, that she gets stung by a bee, which like, she's freaking out 0%. It's like, it hurts to get stung by a bee. I think it's only happened to me once and I was like, it fucking hurt. So it's like, she's just so calm. Like, she doesn't even like flinch basically, and she's just like trying to calm him down. So like, I don't know, I mixed feelings, but like, I'm LOLing at this whole thing. I think that's the thing, is like, it doesn't seem like it would be a comedic moment, but it really, really is.
Yeah, it's so fun. And like, I get it's a book, so it's like, that's a storyline, but I'm like, fate intervened, like, thank you. Oh, fate. It's like, yeah, it's not like real fate, it's like that.
Totally.
Yeah, that's the point of the story.
Totally.
And Antony even admits like, hey, I would never have chosen her as my bride, but fate intervened and I can't wait to fuck her.
No, he's like, okay, I'll marry you. Like,
he's like, great. Like, you know what? This works out well for me, honestly. Yeah. Like, I'm thrilled.
It's so funny.
And then she's like, well, I don't have a dowry. And he's like, okay, I'm rich as fuck.
Yeah, he's like, I don't care.
And then she's like, well, I'm old. And he's like, uh-huh.
Yeah.
And she's like, what else does she, I don't know. She's like, trying to get rid of me? And he's like, she's like, what? No. And she's like, well, you're going to have to get married at some point. And she's like, well, I'd like rather thought I wouldn't. And he like, almost stabbed everyone he's ever met because of that. He's like, how? He's like, look at this girl. She's so hot. Like, how is nobody marrying her?
I know. But he loves that she's, like, hot basically only to him because...
that's, like, a little suspect. I'm like,
yeah. Okay. It's like, yeah. Like, I'm like, okay. Like, a little shady. But, like, because he's like, I feel so honored that I get to, like, witness that, like, I feel special that I'm the one that gets to like witness her like beauty and stuff like that. I don't know, it's cute the way that she writes it, but like
when you think about it for 15 seconds you're like she's not hot but she's hot to me, and I'm like,
yeah,
that's rude, but okay.
But he like so they're having this conversation, it's like the side of the estate, and he fucking kisses her again.
He's like so excited too. She's like, is this a good idea? He's like, I've been dying to do this.
Yeah, he's like,
this
is a really good idea. But Kate, this was like another thing that I didn't get, is that he just like, he kisses her and then he just like immediately like outs that he's like obsessed with her, basically. Like, he says, you're perfect right here, right now, in this moment, in this garden, you're perfect. But I'm like, you wouldn't have said that like an hour ago to her. Like, I don't know. I was a little bit like confused at why he was saying those things when he's supposed to still hate her.
Like, we're friends. He said yesterday. He's like,
right, right.
And she's like, okay, great. And then he also kind of mentions, I don't know if it's out loud or just in his head. It's like, once he's like made a decision and now he's like, we're betrothed. We're like, you're it. Like, we are together. Like, you're not getting rid of me. So I think he's just like, I'm going to feel your boob now. Like, I'm dying to. Please. And she's a little upset because she thinks that.
Yeah.
I think Julia Quinn was smart in how she wrote this line of like, right now, in this moment, you're perfect. And she was like, okay, well, you want Edwina still. But like, in this moment, because you feel my boob, you think I'm perfect.
Right.
So I appreciate that kind of like duality of perspective where she's still like insecure about his feelings for her because he doesn't really say them in words as much. Like, he's not like,
it's not
you
explicit.
Are the one for me, I've always wanted to be with you. It's not like that. And so she kind of has that like insecurity still, and even in this moment he's like, well, like, I know you'd rather marry Edwina.
Yeah.
And then she tells, I love this moment, and she tells Edwina that they're engaged, and she's so excited.
Yeah.
And she's
like, duh. Like,
yeah. And Kate's like, well, aren't you disappointed? She's like,
no.
Are you serious right now? Like, you guys obviously wanted to make out so badly. Like, why didn't you see that? And that's one of my future gripes is how the relationship between Kate and Edwina was portrayed in the show versus in the book has like really disappointed me, because I love their relationship in the book.
Me too. Yeah, she's like, I knew he was obsessed with you. But like, why didn't she like back off or find another suitor at that point?
Because I don't think she was ever pursuing him. Like, yeah, she was just like along for the ride.
No, you're right. She was out with Nigel fucking Burbrook.
Yeah. Like any of the moments she had with Antony was like, Antony made those moments.
You're right. Like, you're totally
right. In the carriage ride, it was because he was taking her home. Or like when they are having their walk down to the lake, it's because Antony was like, well, I'll go get Edwina so I can spend time with her. You know what I mean? Like, it was never of Edwina's making.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. So it's right before the wedding, because they have like a quick wedding, just like Simon
9-day
and Daphne.
Engagement.
Yeah, like brutal. And Antony goes to Kate's residence and is like, okay, by the way, like, I want to just make sure we're like super clear about this marriage. Like, it's going to be based on respect, friendship, and mutual understanding. It is not love.
Oh,
which is like, it's like
so rude.
You're also like so dumb and blind, like you're not able to
he's like I can desire her but I don't have to love her, guys.
Totally.
Like, it's fine, it's totally two separate things. And Kate's like, go fuck yourself. And especially because we see her be like, I'm not sure if I'm in love with him. but like I could definitely see myself falling in love after a few weeks of marriage, my friend.
Yeah, she's disappointed. And he, I just feel like he thinks it's very bachelor-like, I would say. And I mean, like, the TV show that Haley covers. But, like, it's very, like, stages. Like, he, I feel like when he views falling in love, it's, like, this, like, thing that he'll, like, cross over. It's not these, like, little moments that just make, it's like, a bigger picture. Yeah. Yeah. He really just thinks, like, it'll, like, hit him like a bag of bricks. But it's, like, he doesn't understand that all of these interactions that they have are making him love her, not that it's gonna be like a moment that like a switch flips. And yeah, she's really sad. It sucks,
but he still feels her up. He's like, still, now yeah, that conversation is over with,
yeah,
let's make out again, because I love making out with you.
Also, I just want to do this quote because it really is like shows their really funny banter. So he uses like a, yeah, like a tone of voice on her or whatever. Cause yeah, he's like trying to hook up with her. She goes, "Why do I get the impression you find that tone of voice effective on women as well? It usually is. Not this one, especially this one." Ah!
Their banter is so good.
So the night before the wedding, Kate's really nervous because, you know, she knows they're gonna have sex, and Mary gives her the talk, which she does a better job at Violet, but, like, also not really. But she's, like, it can be really, like, sometimes women don't have a pleasant time, which is, I guess, similar to what Violet said. But she's, like, basically, if you're in love with your partner, it, like, makes it a lot better. And she's, like, oh, fuck, that means, like, the conversation we just had, like, this is actually, like, devastating to me.
Yeah. Like, and I also love Edwina in this scene. She's, like, I'm ready to hear the sexy time talk. And
Mary's, yeah, like, she's, like,
I'll tell you before you get married. And she's like, that's not fair.
No, totally.
Like, I love Edwina, such like a little busybody. She's so fun.
She's so fun. Yeah, the show, I feel like, really doesn't do her like character justice.
Also, if I'm Edwina, I'm asking Kate like 3 days after the wedding, like, tell me everything.
Which she tell like, me. I feel like kind of implies that she's going to do. Like, she's, yeah, like, for sure, I'm going to get all the deets.
She's like, well, I'm just going to listen. Mary's going to be the talking. So funny. And, like, I think Mary gives a really interesting perspective here because she was married before marrying Kate's dad and, like, didn't like her first husband. And then it, like, amps up Kate even more. She was like, well, like, man can find pleasure in any woman. Women. And Kate's like, yeah, no! Like, yeah, I'm just some nobody. Yeah.
That's so true. It just really stokes her insecurities of, like, okay, well, it's not going to be good because we're not in love. And also, he can just, yeah, have sex with anybody and, like, doesn't love me in particular. Poor girl. They get married. It's, like, a quick affair at the Bridgerton house. And they have a reception at Anthony's private residence because he, you know, has his little bachelor pad. It's their wedding night. And Kate, this is so fun. They're, like, in the carriage or whatever. And Kate's like, I actually, like, sorry. Like, I know we're, like, about to go have sex, but, like, I just need to wait a week. And she's like, I need to, like, prepare. And he's like, what are you preparing for? Like, how are you going to prepare?
He's such a dick in this scene.
He's and it's such like, a dick. Okay, go ahead. No, go ahead. I've got a fucking gripe.
I can't wait. But I also find the banter, like, so kind of funny in this where, are you nervous? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, well, there's nothing to be scared about. And she's like, well, there is a lot to be nervous about. And he's like, all right, yeah, I get that. And he's like, I'm nervous too. And she's like, well, like, you've done this before. And he's like, well, I've never been married before. And she's like, you've P&V'd before, though. Like, you, yeah, like, don't pretend on me. So I do like the banter.
No, it's so cute. And just, like, him teasing her. But then it does get to a point where it's, like, starting to be condescending. Because people have to understand she knows nothing. And, like, she says in the book, her entire life has been preparation for this very moment, and she didn't even know what to expect next. And, like, just feeling that shitty. And I think, yeah, my gripe is just, like, this is, like, why I like Regency novels. I've really liked this series, but I cannot continue to read them, like, again and again, because it just is a constant reminder of, like...
And we're property!
I know that, yes, because he goes, like...
It's my right to intercourse, yeah, with you. And she's like, rude.
Yeah, like, it's just such a reminder that it's, like, the women were so left in the dark. The guys could have sex with everybody before the wedding and after the wedding. And like, she doesn't even know what's going to happen. Like, she knows nothing. Like, the sex talk is nothing, basically. And just that she wants to prepare, like, feels like she needs to prepare for something that she doesn't even know what's going to happen. Like, it's just so crazy that I just, like, I cannot. It's such a constant reminder in these books that I just, like, can't ever get over them, I think. Which I know you're supposed to, like, suspend judgment and, like, your head's supposed to be in an 18-14 headspace or whatever. But it's, like, I just, it's fucking tough. It's yeah. tough to love someone when they say, I don't like being denied my rights about having sex with his wife.
Yeah.
Like,
yes. No. 100%.
Okay. They arrive at the house. She has a panic attack again because she's fucking stressed. And then he's like, okay, like, sorry, I was a dick. How can I make things right between us to, like, kind of have sex with her? And then she's like, well, I want you to, like, love me. And then he's like, well, I need you, which is, like, very different. And then they have sex. Like, it's like, he, like, that's not.
They sure do.
That's not really, like, what she meant.
No, but I think. No, but, like, I don't know. He took it in a different way, and she was like, you know what, this is fine. He's like, he obviously, like, desires me, and that's, like, good enough for now.
100%. They're, like, mid-penetration.
Like, literally mid-penetration. Like, truly mid. There's a line where he's like, I even moved in 30 seconds, and I'm, like, ready to go. Because he, like, calls her beautiful, and she, like, stops, and she's like, yeah. No. Who are you picturing? He's like, yeah. What are you talking about? He's like, well,
yeah.
Like, you didn't want to marry me. You wanted to marry Edwina. Is that who you're picturing? Like, first of all, mention your sister during intercourse seems horrifying. Yeah,
while
that's
his
fine.
Dick is it currently
literally
in you.
Inside.
Yeah.
And he's like, and then he stops, and he's like, no, I want you so bad. Actually, yeah. You have the quote there. Do you want to say the quote? I can't say it out loud.
I literally can't. He says, I desire you. I burn for you. I can't sleep at night for wanting you. Even when I didn't like you, I lusted for you. It's the most maddening, beguiling, damnable thing. But there it is. It's very cute. But okay, this is the funniest moment. Again, I was LOLing when she's like, she says, may I tell you a secret? And then he's like, of course. And she's like, I didn't think it would fit, referencing his dick. And he's like, that wasn't a secret. It was written all over your face.
Like, would you end it all after your, like, new husband just said that to you? Because I think I would.
No, literally, I would
be like, I would never run in front of a carriage.
Yeah.
Like, so embarrassing.
It's so fucking embarrassing. But they have sex, and he's like, oh my God, I actually, like, might fall in love with her. So basically,
he was like, this is the best intercourse I've ever had.
And he's like, loves that it's, like, in his bed, and, like, it's his wife, and, like, all of this stuff. And so he's like, I'm going to just avoid her for the next, like, foreseeable future.
I'm going to bone her, and we're going to go to balls together, and, like, that's it. And I will not fall in love, because I am busy. I have parts to play. I have newspapers to read.
Totally. But he has, like, yeah, basically nothing to do, which is so funny. And it's actually so, there's one moment where he's like, okay, well, like, one afternoon wouldn't hurt, like, if I just hang out with him for, like, one afternoon.
He was struck with the ridiculous thought of, what's Kate up to?
Yeah, it's
like,
so fucking
dude,
funny.
you're hooked, like, you're in love, sorry, man.
Yeah, hook, line, and sinker. But one night, there's a thunderstorm, and Kate's asleep, and she is really upset. She calls out for her birth mom. She's very childlike. Anthony really soothes her, but in the morning, he tells her what happened. And she's like, oh my God, like, I feel like I need to, like, figure out, like, what is weighing on my heart. Mm-hmm. And so they visit Mary, and Mary's like, you unfortunately witnessed the passing of your mother. And when she passed away, because it was, like, influenza, where I feel like the body is, like, erratic or whatever. And she, like, sat up in bed and was, like, her jaw opened as lightning struck. So Kate thought that the two were, like, intertwined as a kid, I guess. And so she's like, okay, I feel so much more relieved that I know what happened. I'm like about to like overcome this big fear that I've had for my entire life. And Anthony is like, okay, I'm stoked that you like had this moment with Mary, that you've like overcome your fears, but like, I'm not going to overcome my fear with my dad.
But also she like looks at him and she's like, damn, I am in love with him. Well, that sucks because he doesn't love me. And then, yeah, he's like kind of reminiscing on his fears. And like, Kate kind of talks about how she always thought she would just like die during one of these storms. And he was so shocked because he didn't realize that other people had like thoughts of their own mortality like he does.
Yeah.
And then he like strokes her hair and then he's like, oh shit, I am in love with her. Well, this sucks because I'm losing my mind. And then they do it again.
Yeah, they do, which love that for them. Happy for them. And she's like, basically like, I'm gonna like, we're gonna grow old together and stuff like that. And he's like, oh no, I'm like out of here. Like, this is exactly what I didn't want to happen. And he heads back to Bridgerton House. He gets super drunk. He sleeps there. He's like confiding in Benedict and Colin, and they're just like, you gotta tell her that you love her. Like, that's clearly what's happened. And he makes, like, he comes to the understanding that even if he dies young, he wants to be happy. He wants to be married to Kate, no matter if he, like, doesn't live past 38. So he's like, okay, it's the next morning. I'm going to go find her. But she's out with Edwina and Edwina's new crush, Mr. Bagwell.
A scholar from Oxford.
Yeah, a scholar, just what she wanted. So they're in Hyde Park again, and he locates them just as their carriage hits a rock and like flips over. And Edwina and Mr. Bagwell are fine, but Kate is stuck under the carriage, and Antony's like, oh my god, she's dead. It should have been me. She's like fucking dead. I'm dead because she's dead. And like, he's so upset. So he's like yelling that like it should have been me and stuff like that. And she like wakes up from being unconscious, and she's, and he's like, I love you, and like all of this stuff, pulls her out of the carriage, like a superhero moment. And the next day, like when Kate is being healed by some doctors, she's like, what did you mean by like, it was supposed to be me, it's not her time yet, like all of this. Yeah, like, because
when she came to, she was like, what are you fucking talking about?
Yeah.
Like, what are you saying right now? And he's just like, she's alive.
Like, he's so psycho. And then he's like, explains basically what's been going on with him for this whole time. And then he's like, I was afraid to love you because of the pain of like my father's death. I don't want that for you. I didn't want that for me, etc. And you know, all's well that ends well. They say that they love each other and live happily ever after. It's so cute. I had such a good time reading this book. Okay, let's get into our internet investigation. This is our cursory peruse of the internet of things you need to know. Newton is based off a dog that lives in Julia's neighborhood.
I love that. And I wish I had a local corgi that I could be friends with.
I know. It's like, that'd be so cool if you were just, you know, a neighbor of this famous author, and then your book becomes a beloved character in a book series and TV show. And then Julia, again, the author, says that Pall Mall is one of the most famous scenes in the entire series. And a lot of people talked about it, I think, when the book was becoming a movie or a TV show, that they were like very excited to see this scene play out. And she's like kind of talking about how she like added it in randomly because she needed a scene where Kate saw Anthony in a favorable way. And it's like the fun times with his family that did that, which is like, okay, also like gripe and grumble, not to like move on, but it's like, that was the same with the Duke and I. Yeah. It's like Simon saw Daphne with his, with her family, and was like, I
want that.
Yeah, want that. So it's like, it's kind of, it's the same. But also, these books, weren't they published in the same year? I think she kind of maybe like whipped it off, which it doesn't like, I would say it doesn't detract from the novel, but like when you read them so sequentially, like I did, it kind of is like,
Yeah, I think the first time I read the series, I also very much felt like that, because after like reading this one right after The Duke and I, it is like, are all of these books gonna like have that same plot line?
Yeah.
And then kind of once you read it as a collective, we, spoiler alert, don't go back to that well.
Yeah.
It is very odd that we went back to back. And then also the only time I reread The Duke and I was for your podcast, where I've read this one like truly 50 billion times. And so I like forget how similar it is to Duke and I, because like I don't even think about that one. I'm like, only the Viscount who loved me.
I know. Which I feel like I'm going to be now moving forward. Just like comparing the two is like really tough, because this one is just so much better. I think Daphne and Simon, we kind of see this in season two of the show too. Like, they're kind of bores. Like, they're kind of like a little bit boring compared to Kate and Anthony.
Like, Kate is one of my favorite female leads, like, in all of the books I've read. Like, I just love her. Like, she's always exactly herself. She, you know, she's never afraid to be exactly who she is, and Anthony loves her for that. And I also just, like, love the family dynamic between the Sheffields. And, you know, Anthony can be kind of a dick sometimes, and that is a little tough, but it just, I love in the book, once they get married, like, the happy times they have together. Like, yeah. Like, I find that so sweet and lovely. And we didn't get that in the show. So I'm hoping that we do get that in the third season a little bit.
Which it seems like from the teasers we've gotten, we will get that. But, like, fucking hell, I got so much to say about that.
I can't wait.
Okay, I have no wonder why's, because like this book I feel like was so explicit.
This is clear to me, and maybe it's because I just like take everything at face value. I like forget to ask questions.
I guess when I read it, I forgot to ask questions too.
I had no questions. I was in like a haze of love.
Exactly. But I do have gripes and grumbles, so these are our nitpicky problems we have with the book. Oh, I didn't talk about this. We didn't talk about this, but like the one scene we have Kate interact with Penelope, it's for her to mention that she's lost weight and she's on the marriage market. It's like, okay, fuck, like, let's do this. Like, of course.
I totally agree with you, but we kind of have to remember that when this was released in 2000,
I know,
being pudgy was like a hate crime.
No, like, and like, it still is. I feel like,
but
to an extent.
At least this gives the proof. Because I feel like a lot of the discourse about Colin and Penelope is that he only likes her now that she's lost weight.
Yeah.
Like, it has nothing to do with, like, her losing weight after her first season.
No, I know. It's giving Ugly Duckling right now, but it's also just giving, like, oh, of course, the one mention, like, is surrounding something that's, like, not important. Like, yeah. It annoyed me. But yeah, it's just like, I guess women had the same trappings in 2000 as they did in 2024, as they did in 1814.
Bleak.
It's so bleak, dude. So fucking bleak. And then I feel like I've talked about this ad nauseum at this point, but it's like, it hinges on very similar plot devices as The Duke and I. There's the quick red wedding because the female main character is ruined. She's a fallen woman. The main characters fall in love because of an interaction with their family. And then the female main character has an accident in the third act, and the male main character realizes he loves her.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I bet like nothing happens, because literally it's like half the events of, I feel like, The Duke and I. But like, I kind of liked that also, because it was really character-driven, not event-driven.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I was like, yeah, give me these two hotties talking to each other. That's all I want.
It really is that. It really is that. And then sequel scoop, this is the tea on any upcoming sequels, seasons, and the general reception. The next book in the series is An Offer from a Gentleman, covering Benedict's story. And there's a second epilogue on Julia's website, 15 years into the relationship. I haven't read that yet, but I think I'll read it after this pod. And then according to Everand, which is like an audiobook company, this is the best-selling book in the series.
That's very interesting.
It is. Is it the catchy title?
I don't know. And here's my thing with the entire Bridgerton series, is that most of the men suck. And then so it's hard. I found it hard to enjoy a lot of our like Bridgerton girly lead books because the men, like all of the men across the board, except with like the exception of one man, kind of suck. And so it's hard to get behind the stories of the girlies who you love being like, oh, you're settling for this shitty guy. Where at least the Bridgerton boys, they're falling in love with these really cool, strong, dynamic women. So yeah. I often finding like the Bridgerton boy books more engaging.
Yeah, which and I sucked, yeah, no, I get that. Also just because the Bridgerton is family is so lovely and they're raised so well and stuff like that, I feel like, I don't know, they just bring a lot to the table.
Yeah. I'm really interested to hear your perspective on the rest of the books, cuz I do think I feel like I said this during The Duke and I do think you should read Benedict's book next, even though that's not the next TV series we're watching.
Yeah.
But I think if you're going to read Romancing Mr. Bridgerton, which I assume you are planning on.
Yes, of course.
I do think you should read Benedict's book in between. And I think that's the shortest one of all of them. Like, it really is a pretty easy breezy read. It connects a lot of dots, I feel like, between the two books here.
I'll read it just so I can get out of reading A Court of Wings and Ruin.
I think that's fine. Literally, you could read three Bridgerton books in the time you'd read one of these mother effers.
Yeah,
actually, I could probably read the whole Bridgerton series.
Yeah,
this is taking me. I started this last Sunday, and books don't usually take me that long to read. And here we are with 200 pages left. I do think I'm gonna finish it today, but like, it just.
It's too much. I read like 100 pages and it took me like fucking 6 hours. It usually takes me like 60 minutes to read 100 pages. No. Like, it's fucking brutal. Okay, let's talk about the TV show. So we're talking about Bridgerton season 2. It was released on Netflix on March 25th, 2022. Same kind of cast as season 1 that we talked about, but we have Simone Ashley as Kate. We have Charitha Chundran as Edwina. We have Shelley Conn as Mary, and we have Callum Lynch as Theo Sharp. And Julia Quinn's been involved in all of the seasons. I'm sure season 3 and all the other ones to come. There's a lot of differences.
There are so many differences, but the way I was so freaking hyped for this season to come out.
Me too.
Because it was like my favorite book in the series. I could not wait. I think I watched the trailer like literally daily. Like, this was my hyper fixation for those 4 months where I was just like, this is all I care about. Is this? And I think I like stayed up all night to watch the series and woke up early to like finish it because I was so obsessed. And I think it's a great season of television.
It's not
my book. It's not the book I love.
It's not the book. It's really not the book. I watched this when it came out March 25th because I was so obsessed with Bridgerton season 1, and we waited fucking like 2 years plus, 2.5 years, I think, two and a quarter years to get this one. And so I was like, again, feral. Anthony Bailey, or Jonathan Bailey, who plays Anthony, I want to say, I think is my new like celebrity crush, like forever.
Right.
Because
so hot in this season.
He is so fucking hot.
And like, one of the stills they released beforehand was like him getting out of the water, and it was
like, oh my god,
embarrassing
that
for me. Like, no, I was like, literally. I didn't realize I like had such a thing for men.
Oh no, I know. It was like me seeing a man for the first time. I felt like, literally, he is so fucking hot in this series. He's so good at the smolder, and same with Simone Ashley. Like, don't get me wrong, but like, holy fuck! But I was like so feral for this season. So I watched the season when it aired, and then I just read the book this week or last week or whatever. Then I just rewatched the series this week as well, and I was like so disappointed. Which, like, I wasn't disappointed when I watched it for the first time because I didn't know what was in the book.
Exactly. And like, don't get me wrong, I love Simone Ashley, and I love the changes that they made of like the Sheffields becoming the Sharmas and that family coming from India. Like, I thought that was so cool, and like to highlight a lot of those traditions. My main issue with it is the like how far Anthony goes with Edwina's storyline.
Exactly.
The moment where he like came out of the house and propose to Edwina. Like, that was one of the most shocking moments I've ever witnessed in television. Like, I think I audibly gasped. Damn. And I was, like, horrified. And I think that was the moment where I was like, okay, I'm going to bed now. Like, I gotta go to bed. Because I was so, like, hurt. Because, like I said, one of my favorite parts about the book was, like, after their wedding, watching them fall in love. And we didn't get any of those really sweet moments. No, and I feel like we didn't even get any, like, no, and we didn't even get, like, any of the good, like, banter moments when they still hated each other. We had a lot of longing gazes, which was, like, hot, but, like, we didn't get into the depths of it where I didn't believe, like, why they were falling in love with each other.
Totally, and we didn't get the sweet banter. Like, the scene where, like, there's so many scenes where they're bantering, and but it's cute. We only got the hate banter, which, again, is, like, hot and stuff like that in this context, but, like, it doesn't do them justice. I understand, like I just said, like, fucking 10 seconds ago, nothing happens in the book. So I totally understand when you're making it for TV that you're going to have to zhuzh it up a little bit.
Yeah,
otherwise, totally people are going to be like, this is Pride and Prejudice where nothing happens. And, like, we're not making that show. We're making this sexy, vibrant, like, drama, like, gasping kind of, like, yeah, like, you're shook to your core type of show. And It fucking sucks. It really sucks that they are basically two different pieces of work. And so many of the moments that I loved in the book did not even get mentioned in the series. And they get together literally episode 8.
Like, minute 55 out of 50.
Yes, yes. Like, yeah, literally. It's like minute 30, but, like, so it's like they have 30 minutes together at the end. Like, it's so unfair. Whereas, like, in The Duke and I season one, like, in Bridgerton season one, they get together, like, episode, like, 4. And then they have the falling out and stuff like that and then get back together. But, like, they are together for the last half of the show. And it just sucks so bad.
Yeah. I will say about the show is I love all of, like, the side characters and side plot lines to make it a whole well-rounded TV product.
Yes, they
I'm never gonna have any gripes about that. It makes sense to me, etc., etc. But yeah, and, like, I'm able to separate the fact that this is a TV product and it had to be different from the book. But as somebody who loved the book so much, I was disappointed with what happened. And it's like, oh, we can't really, like, get that back, you know? But, and, you know, it's funny. Something else I thought was interesting was season one was talked about as such, like, it is porn for ladies. Like, it is just everyone's boning all over the grounds.
Like, yeah, it's like female gaze porn.
Yeah, where this series had, like, very little intercourse, which is, like, fine. By, like,
no, it's not. So I'm Haley.
Like, you know what? You're right. I'm wrong.
Yeah, it's like, no, you're wrong. We see Benedict fucking more than Anthony in this season.
Okay, but they're like, but the gazebo scene is, like, it's so hot that it, like, makes up for it.
No, and then when she's thinking about it the next morning in the mirror and she's, like, visioning it and we see her POV. I watched it, like, 6 times. I was watching it on my laptop and I literally did, like, the 10 seconds back. 10 seconds back. 10 times. I'm so embarrassed. Oh my god. No, I know. It's like, it's worth it, but don't we see only the one sex scene? Like, it just sucks. Like, I want to see more.
We saw a sex scene in, like, the epilogue. Not really, like, full-on intercourse, but, like, we saw boob. I thought they did a pretty good job at, like, changing what Anthony was afraid about, because in the book it's so specific and so in his head that I was interested to see how that would play out on television. And I think they did a really good job at adapting that, and it led to one of my favorite moments, which was after when Mrs. Bridgerton was going to tell Anthony like Kate's awake, and, like, him, like, crying. Like, that was one of the most, like, moments. And then, like, led to that lovely apology. Anthony and Gregory had a really lovely moment too.
Yes, yeah, where he's, like, kind of fathering him. There's also the moment where they're playing Pall Mall and the ball goes to his grave, the dad's grave.
Yeah.
And they have that moment. So it's, like, they definitely did a good job of, like, making kind of a meal out of a crumb from the book. Like, it just seemed it was depicted well. A lot of things in this show are depicted well. They just change the entire story. No. So like you mentioned, the Sheffields are from India. They changed their last name to Sharma. We see a lot of Indian culture like depicted on screen, which I think was really great. Watching Avantika, Mean Girls, the musical, and she was like, I think that she was asked on a red carpet, like, when was the first time you felt represented on screen? And she actually said Bridgerton season 2. So I feel like there's a lot of good cultural representation here. We see like the hair oiling, the preparation of tea. They use nicknames for each other. We see Haldi before the turmeric paste kind of ceremony before the wedding. Like it's very beautifully done. And we get this like extra, just like a little bit more of like Kate's, well, I guess it's Kate and Edwina's biological grandparents. It's like of the dad who passed away.
Oh, see, I thought it was Mary's parents.
No, you're right. You're right. Which you're right.
It is confusing, but I think it's her parents because they were so mad. That's why
they like Edwina and not Kate. Yeah.
And yes. They were so mad that she like married an Indian merchant instead of like a nobleman.
Okay. Yes, you're totally right. But I think that gave it a, like, that just made the story more interesting, that they're like, we'll provide a trust fund if Edwina marries an English nobleman. So they have more high stakes for the season. And also, Kate's not even on the marriage market in the book. She's like, right? She's a spinster.
No, she isn't.
Right?
She's in the book. They like
opposite.
But she's not as much in the, because they kind of mention it a few times in the series. Like, you can find a husband here too. And she's like, no, I'm going back to India. Thank you.
Yeah, she's like, I'm gonna be like a teacher, and I'm gonna head back to India. This is really just for Edwina. Also, they changed the whole fucking plot of the book about why they have to get married, because no one sees them and the bee sting and him sucking on her bubbies.
I know, and it was just, and like the fact that we like made it to the wedding was so like devastating, and I don't know why, but it was so devastating. It's that we like so got bad. To like the Antony and Edwina wedding, and because like I felt bad for Edwina too, and like a lot of people have issues with Edwina because she was like a bit of a brat and she was so mean to Kate, but like wouldn't you be a little mean to your sister if she like was lying to you about like a lot of stuff?
It is really sweet the first time that they kiss in the show. They kiss at the altar when he was supposed to be marrying Edwina, but like, okay, so like I know they needed the drama and they needed to, you know, make 8 episodes out of it, but it's so bad how far it goes, mm-hmm. because he's also, it's not just the wedding. He is pursuing her in a way that's so different from the book, because in the book, he's just like trying to see her and like bring her flowers.
Yeah.
In the show, he does the poem. He does the proposal. He does like, there's so many things that he does to pursue Edwina in a way that would make Kate feel like, why do you like me? Because you seem actually legitimately trying to pursue Edwina. It's really shitty.
It's so tough. Shitty. It's so tough, yeah.
Yeah, and we don't, like, there's no carriage scene. She does fall off a horse, and she's, like, in a coma for a week, but it's not the same type of moment, dramatic moment that we get in the book.
Yeah.
Also, in the fucking show, he proposes to her when she's out of a coma with the same ring.
I'm so mad.
Because he fucking proposed to Edwina with the heirloom ring. I think they should have. I think that would have been a good scene to add into season 2. Is like Violet being like, hey, Antony, here's the heirloom betrothal ring that I've been saving for you. And then him be like, oh, thanks. But like, I'm actually just going to buy one for Edwina. Because he knew he was saving the real one for Kate.
It's annoying.
So annoying. But there's like fun new additions too, like we get the horse racing. Like I thought that was a very fun scene.
I like that she's like kind of seeing somebody and he gets so
jealous. I liked that guy. Bring him back.
Me too. Yeah, what's he up to? The Featheringtons.
I can tell. I feel like what happened was everyone was so obsessed with the Featheringtons from season 2. And they're like, we gotta even make them bigger characters in season 1 and make them bigger characters in season 2. because they're broke because, you know, the dad gambled them into death and then took his own life. So they're like the cousin Jack Featherington comes to save them all, but he's penniless, which is so funny because Lady Featherington is trying to get Prudence to marry Uncle Jack to inherit his wealth, but he's trying to marry Cressida Cowper because they're
rich. He's also poor, yeah.
And it's so funny. So,
and then like him and Mrs. Featherington like hook up.
Like literally why? It's so funny. And then like Portia's like kind of like a little bit wooed by him, but then like realizes that like they're always going to be like scheming and there's like kind of no way out. So she like finally just like after all of these like selling fake ruby mine stocks or whatever, they like finally send him away to the Americas. We get a lot of also Penelope and Eloise because Eloise's, it's her debut season and she's still trying to figure out who Lady Whistledown is. And so they're like more, she gets more information. She finds the printer where Lady Whistledown prints her papers. She meets Theo Sharp and they kind of have a little bit of a romance. She like learns what class is for the first time.
She's an idiot.
I find Eloise frustrating a little bit because she's so like I'm actually so progressive, and it's like, girl, you do not know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like in a very like white feminism way, like in a very like not intersectional way.
Yeah,
but she's learning it. And she finally at one point realizes that it's Penelope. She knows like Madame Delacroix is involved and stuff like that, but she's at a ball, I think it's the Hearts and Flowers ball, and she sees Penelope making all these observations about people that are there because she didn't go to balls before because she wasn't out. And so like, oh, I just like the turn of phrases you're using and the way that you're observing people is exactly what Lady Whistledown does. So she realizes it's her and she confronts her and they have this like big falling out because she's like, you have talked so much shit about me and my family. Like, how could you?
But like, honestly, Penelope tried to like save her basically. Like she was saying things to kind of get her out of the trouble of, because she would have been ruined if they would have, if it would have come out that she was dallying with Theo, which she like trying to was, that's not a good sentence. But yeah, like Penelope did sue her a little bit, but to like overall save her, which is like, Penelope is like 17, 18. Yeah, she is going to make dumb 18-year-old girl mistakes. Like she is. And people are really hard on Penelope about that. And probably because like the Marina stuff from last season, which I can like, I can understand.
Fair. I just don't know how she's going to get out of this.
I don't either.
Like she's made a mess. So I just don't know how they're going to like wrap it up.
Yeah. So for me, it does very much make sense that they're moving into romancing Mr. Bridgerton.
Mm-hmm.
As the third series, even though that's the fourth book, because like all of those characters are present, it makes sense to kind of like wrap them up.
It's so funny though, at the end of The Viscount Who Loved Me in the epilogue, when Kate and Antony are talking about Lady Whistledown and they're like, yeah, she like talks about Colin a lot. Like,
she loves Colin.
Which also just shows, like, I love when again books drop these little hints. It's like that doesn't come for another 2 books.
Yeah.
It's so good. The costumes, just as good as season one. Lots of jewel love tones, them. Gold, bangles. Like, they're bringing in a lot of, like, these things that I think are represent India. I'm obsessed with Antony's pinky ring. why am I feral for his pinky ring? It's definitely, like, did you watch Normal People?
No. I read the book in preparation to watch the series. And I don't think I'll watch this series.
That's so fair. What's the main character's name again? I was going to say Connell. It's Connell.
Yeah.
Connell's silver chain is Antony's pinky ring, I think.
I love that.
And I just love how they show Kate. She's so wound up and she's so... Even Antony, I feel like in the beginning of the season, all of her updos are like very like tight buns and stuff like that. And then just like as the season progresses, her hair becomes more like loose and natural. Like, I think they just did a really good job of like depicting kind of how her personality is changing. And we get like tons of really good music. Do you have any like hit songs like that really like crushed it in this season?
I think Wrecking Ball and Dancing on My Own were my favorite.
I also really liked Material Girl, and then I really like You Oughta Know and Sign of the Times.
And What About Us was good too.
Yeah, no, they're like all good. Really good. Yeah. I don't know why.
Who
I'm
am I kidding?
To, like, yeah. Am I kidding? They fucking slayed the soundtrack once again. Yeah.
I can't. That's like what I'm most excited about for season three is like, what songs are we doing?
I know. Me too. I'm so fucking excited. Okay, let's talk about our roundtable discussion. Our internet investigation. There was just like COVID shit. Like we didn't get this season for like 2 years because production kept getting shut down due to COVID, which just sucks. Everything's just like pushed so far back. Like I cannot believe we have to wait until May 2024 when this came out in 2022.
Yeah, and it's like the first season came out in December of 2020, so we're getting to like a long time in between seasons. I'm really hoping that we won't have as long in between the next season, especially because like with the actors and writers strikes and everything, like that was probably the reason for this one being a little bit more delayed. So hopefully everything is good and we can get season four.
It puts the cast in a tight spot because they probably have other projects that they need to work on as well. And like, I just want the whole cast to be there.
Yeah.
Is basically.
Yeah. Thing. Because like this one clip of Jonathan Bailey and Simone Ashley like dancing and being in love. It was like, we missed out on so much of like Reggie John Page not being there.
Oh my God. That is like my biggest, like it fucking pisses me off because Simon would have been at the wedding, especially if the queen is hosting it. Because in the show, the queen hosts this big wedding. It's like Simon would be there. It pisses me off so much. And guess what? Daphne's not back for season three.
So, I know, and that sucks.
Like, that fucking sucks. She was so instrumental. They really used her in the Colin role of, like, advising Anthony on his feelings because this just happened to her.
Yeah.
Okay, our Wonder Whys. I didn't get why the queen and Mary had beef.
I don't either.
Like, I think it's just
that she, like, left. Yeah, I think she's just because she, like, went to go be with, like, a merchant.
And the queen should be... I think she should get that because of the way she views love. Like, I just don't get that. And then I was thinking about this. Why does Penelope want to be Lady Whistledown?
Because she just, like, wants to have control over the narrative of, like, what's happening to her. Is because, like, especially in the book, like, people are so mean to her that she just kind of, like, wants a way to, like, not even get back, but, like I said, control the narrative of the Ton and kind of, you know, have something for herself. Once you read the fourth book, you'll kind of like get how we got there. Like, she does a really good job of explaining like the process and everything. But I think she just like wants, she's so used to being the most picked on sister of like the most picked on family that she just like wants to do something for herself.
100%. No, that actually makes a lot of sense. Because, yeah, she doesn't want to be there. She feels like she doesn't get to participate in the same way as other people. So this is, like, a way for her to do that. Another bone I have to pick is, like, Edwina, played by Sharitha, is just literally looks so young compared to Anthony.
Yeah.
But it's like, of course, Kate and him are going to end up together. So young compared to him. She, I will say, is probably the most beautiful woman I've ever seen so in my entire life. Like, it's actually unfair.
Like, all of the Sharmas is like, I'm mad about how pretty they all are.
Gorgeous.
It's like, that's not fair for all of you to be so pretty.
No, I know. It's really not. But, like, they just don't, like, look like a match. Like, they don't look like they would be together.
Yeah.
I don't know, for some reason. So I'm like, the writing was on the wall, you guys, and you just didn't notice.
Yeah.
We also get the Hearts and Flowers Ball, which is like, could we have come up with a better name than Hearts and Flowers Ball?
That sounds like a bad, like, country music festival in rural Ontario.
100%. And, like, it's so funny when Violet and Daphne are, like, arranging the flowers and Violet is like, you've become such a great duchess, when it's like, they're literally arranging flowers, guys. like, she's meant for more than this. Like, yep. I also thought there was times where Lady Whistledown could have been discovered so many more times. Like, there are times where Penelope is at an event with so few guests that I'm like, if they just really thought about it, I feel like they could, like, narrow it down. But they're all, they're always just, like,
too focused on themselves.
Yeah. Like, literally when they go to the week at Aubrey Hall, there's, like, 30 guests. So it's like, and then all of the news ends up in Lady Whistledown. So unless she has, like, an informant, which I guess that informant would know who she is, it's like, you could just question those 30 people, but they're still so confused. Okay. And any gripes and grumbles from you from season two, other than just it's an entirely different.
Like, it's hard to have gripes and grumbles because it's like not the same product. It's just like I don't take it. I don't take it for the same product as the book. And that's okay.
I know.
Is what I tell myself to feel better about, like, how disappointed I am, because the book I love so much. It's like going to the movies to see your favorite book on screen and they just, like, absolutely butcher it.
That's why I stopped watching Gossip Girl the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like I don't think they butchered this TV show. I think they made an excellent TV product. It just, like, wasn't what I wanted. It just wasn't what I wanted, and that's okay, but it just wasn't what I wanted. I wanted Kate and Anthony to be happy together forever and ever and ever at episode 4.
Is there a specific scene other than them getting, like, together earlier? Is there a specific scene that you really wanted?
I don't know, all of them. Like, yeah, is that fair?
I know.
Like, I like the kiss scene in the book. It just, like, made, I don't know, I just like that. I liked the whole book and I wanted it just, like, played out exactly as it was written.
I know,
that's not fair.
I would have liked the Newton in the park scenes. Mm-hmm. I was like chase scenes, I feel like, are, like, tried and true in TV and movie. So I'm like,
yeah.
I was surprised that they didn't put those in. And I just wanted some more of the quotes. I feel like when I read The Duke and I watched season one, I was like, oh, that's a pull quote from the mm-hmm. book. And I feel like I didn't say that once in this season.
Yeah. Except, like, when he was, like, sniffing the air and, like,
yes!
And, what's her name?
Lady Danbury's, like, fucking contain it. Yeah. They did keep the lilies and soap smell, and they did keep the one time where Antony brings pink roses mm-hmm. to Edwina, and Kate's like, that's what I would have wanted. Okay, our sequel scoop. Let's wrap her up. Okay, we talked about that season 3 comes out next month. They're skipping book 3, Benedict's story. They're going straight to book 4, which is Colin and Penelope. We're going to be covering it with another special guest for May 22nd. I'm very, very excited. I've been starved for Bridgerton content.
I know, and the pollen stands are pretty upset that the latest clip we got was of Kate and Antony, but as a Kate and Antony stan, I was thrilled that we got Kate and Antony.
Me too. Also, it's like, we had the same complaint that we didn't see Simon and Daphne in season 2, so of course they're gonna try to get Kate and Antony back. Also, I just want to say, Jonathan Bailey is a way bigger actor than both Phoebe Divener and Regé Jean Page, and yet they couldn't come back.
Babes in Wicked.
Yeah, he is the moment right now. He just had that movie come out a few months ago that everyone was obsessed with. He is the one, he has Wicked coming out, and then I think another really, really big project. It's like, this man is booked and busy, yet y'all couldn't show up for a few side scenes. Like, fuck you.
I think Jonathan Bailey just, like, really loves this series, and so he's like, call me anytime.
I know. I feel like they really have, like, fun on set and stuff like that. Like, they do feel like a really fun cast. The show amassed 193 million viewing hours in its opening weekend, the highest opening for any English language Netflix series at the time. And I think it's still, like, number 2 or something like that of all time. And then we saw a big increase in fashion and in interior design trends that were influenced by the show, dubbed Regency Core, or the Bridgerton effect. So that's kind of like corsets, headpieces, elbow-length gloves. I think definitely, like, the coquette ribbons and stuff like that are a direct result of that. And this is insane also because the series female leads Daphne and Kate were also linked to a popularity in colors, which is the sky blue and lilac. Like, that's insane. So I bet we'll also see. I wonder if someone looks at it. I bet we'll see baby name trends. I'm sure Penelope, Daphne, and Kate will be, like, trending in the next couple years or over the next couple years. And there was a 90% rise in people buying croquet sets.
I love that. That's so funny. You know what? Maybe I should get one.
I was thinking
that. Summer. That should be the summer game.
Yeah, I had one as a kid. Like, my parents had a set that we always played, but I think, like, we got rid of it. And I was like, fucking bring it back. I'm obsessed.
Yeah, we're starting it.
And obviously, tourism has increased. Like, you can go to a lot of the filming locations, which I was like, should I go back to England just to do a little bit of a Bridgerton, like,
hell yeah,
series tour?
You and I will go. Let's go to, yeah, we should do that.
I feel like I would want to, like, show up, though, in, like, a full outfit.
I don't know if I'm going that far. I will say I'm, like, committed to a bit, but, like, not that committed.
I was actually gonna think, and I was thinking in my head, I was like, should you, me, and Angela show up in full Regency core for our next recording?
That I could do. Although I don't know if I own anything. Can you imagine doing a 2-hour podcast in a corset, though?
Also, just like the style of dresses they're wearing, at least in the show, they're not for like big boobed girls like me. Mm-hmm.
Like, no. There's just, like, these tiny little strips of fabric.
I got the top, like, I would be, like, the mamas with their boobs just, like, pushed up to their chin. Like, okay. Haley, any final thoughts on The Viscount Who Loved Me or Bridgerton Season 2?
I was just so excited to talk about it. I was excited to be able to talk about, like, the book in full length, in depth, and because it's, like, one of my favorite books. And, like, I'm really happy you also enjoyed it, because it's always weird going into something where I was like, I love this so much, and you're like, I was lukewarm. So I'm glad you also really enjoyed it, and I hope that you continue to read the series,
because I'm going to, like, fun.
It's a good, like, summer, like, over the summer to read. So I do need your, like, live opinions of every book you read in that series. And I mean, like, I try and read all the ones for this podcast too, so I can listen.
Literally, I really wanted to skip Benedict's, but I'll read it.
You have to read it.
I know, I will.
It's, like, not that much of a commitment. I really do think it's the shortest one.
Who do you think's getting in the TV show the next season? I think it's Hyacinth.
No.
You think it's Benedict?
No, I want Eloise. Benedict and Eloise's to be together.
Yeah, you were saying that. Did someone suggest that, like, in production, or did you just think of that yourself?
I just want that. I just think it would make, like, it's just, like, really, we're going to do 8 series of this show? Like, I don't think so. And, like, once you read the books, you'll get it, because we have such a big time jump between Benedict's and Colin's, but then we do Colin and then Eloise, and then Francesca's. But Francesca's book takes place over the same duration between Colin's and Eloise's. So it's, like, happening at the same time. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Also, when I said Hyacinth, I meant Francesca.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not the child.
I was like, Hyacinth is a baby. I was like, girly, she's 12. We're not
sorry. I'm so sorry. That was so dumb. No, I definitely – sorry. I think they're going to do Francesca soon because they aged up her character because she was so young.
I need you to read the series, and then you'll see why I'm not quite there.
Stoked on it? Yeah. Okay.
No, I'm not stoked. But, like, I think we are seeing the lead up to Francesca's story in this series. And I think that's a good thing. But Francesca's book is different than the lead up of her story.
I think that it makes sense for them to do Eloise. I think they could either do Eloise and then Benedict and then Francesca and then end the series, or just do a hybrid of one of those. And then I think this show only has 2 to 3 more seasons left in it. And so I could see them just doing Eloise, Francesca, and Benedict and calling it a day.
Yeah. Yeah. So I need you to read the books and then come back to me and we'll...
We'll podcast about it.
Yeah. once you read Colin's book, there's a line in there where you'll understand what they're doing with Francesca in this season.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Okay, I gotta get it on the docket then.
Yeah.
Okay, this was so fun, Haley. It was so fun. Can you tell the listeners where they can find you and anything else you want to plug?
Sure. We are wrapping up the Bachelor coverage over on the Bachelor Wrap Up. Finale is, as we're recording, it's tomorrow. So once it comes out, it'll have happened, I think, based on the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So we're wrapping that up. But don't worry, Top Chef has just started. So the Top Chef Wrap Up is back. If you want to hear more of my thoughts on what I am reading, I do have a Bookstagram account at The Strong Library. Then you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HStrong _.
Thank you so much for coming on. We'll see you in May.
Thanks for having me. We'll be back.
And that's the story of the Viscount who loved me. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you to Haley for joining me on today's show. If you're enjoying Ready to Be Romance, share it with a friend. Post about it on socials and subscribe and leave a rating and review. I know that is a long list of things to do, but especially in the early days of a pod, it's so important for people who listen to share it with others so we can grow a little community here. If you want to suggest a book or leave a voicemail for a future episode, you can do so via the links in the episode show notes. I appreciate you all so much for listening. Our next episode is A Court of Wings and Ruin. Until then, happy reading. For Ready to Be Romanced, I'm Tori. Goodbye.